Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by a very special guest, the founder and director of this very organization. Welcome, Sherry Huber.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So one of the things that I think makes Sherry such an amazing visionary leader is not only her ability to see what's needed next in a project, but her patience as she waits for the rest of us to catch up and hop on board. So I think, Sherry, it was maybe, two, possibly three years ago now, that you started to see that English was really the thing that was going to make the difference in Cantalumba.
Yeah. And, of course, as you know, because we've both been there for every step of this, starting a school in a foreign country is a, well, starting a school anywhere, I suppose, starting a school in this country is a kind of a dicey proposition because there are just so many rules and regulations and that a person has to meet. And then if we compound that by being foreigners attempting to start a school in the country, it's just, you know, it's just not anything we really want to take on.
Yeah.
And so how do we provide the education for children that we can see is not available to them for a variety of reasons and that's so essential if they're going to have hope of having a different kind of life.
Yeah, so for even many, many of the children that we come in contact with who come to Living Compassion for the Food Program, they are, I have to use quote marks in the air, in school.
Yes, 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 they
school.
Are. And I think you were, I don't know if you were talking on Good News or, you know, where I heard this, but that we recently learned that even the top kids in the local schools cannot pass national standards for advancing to the next grade or graduating from high school or that sort of thing.
Yeah. So the top of the class students are literally failing.
Yeah.
No students are passing.
Yeah. So you know what to do. And the first thing, of course, that we looked at was the co-op members have to be able to speak English because English is the language of the country that they live in, and people who can't speak that language are just doomed to remain in poverty. And so beginning that encouragement and then trying to get the little kids more grounded in English. And but you know, how do we do this? And then that dawning that we could start essentially not a mentoring program. That's what we do in awareness practice, isn't it? tutoring.
Yeah, it's interesting that you use that word because in a sense, that does feel like what a piece of it is, because what we're looking for right now, I mean, I feel like this was the thing that you really saw, was we need someone who can come in there and captain this effort.
Yes.
So we have Teresa, who speaks beautiful English. She speaks amazing English, but she's hideously outnumbered.
Yes.
And, you know, she also doesn't have the background to do it.
Yes.
She's not educated herself.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes, we know that, if we're going to have somebody come in who's going to be able to take on the adults in the cooperative, who many of whom have never been to school, and then the older kids, many of whom actually have never been to school, or if they have, it's just such poor quality education that it almost doesn't count. And then the little ones. And, of course, the dream that I have for Cantalumba is that English language school would become so obviously, the quality would be so high that people from the larger community would want to come there for classes and, just make a difference even beyond our little corner of Cantalumba.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel it's interesting because on this last trip, I talked with Rose, who, you know, of course, we hired her as a nurse, but it turns out that she has a huge heart and a ton of expertise and many, many ideas. And so she's been an amazing resource for us. And it was such a pleasure to sit and speak with her and hear her articulate almost exactly what I've sat with you and had you articulate. So the two visions kind of lining up perfectly,
uh-huh.
which is that the children are not getting what they need, period. I mean, you can, you know, go way beyond Cantillon, but you can go into some of the neighborhoods that are far more well off, you know, much better off than Cantillon, and still, I mean, the system of education in the entire country is limping along. And her point and your point, I feel like, is what the possibility we have is to fill the gap for people.
Yeah.
And to actually, what she said is, even if you don't have teachers, you have books.
Uh-huh.
And we started to talk about Teresa as a perfect example. Of, I mean, you would never know that Teresa dropped out of school in grade 7 because
yeah.
she's so bright and she's been reading and writing English her entire life.
Yes. In fact, reads books that we bring her on all kinds of topics. She can just sit down and pick up any book and read it, which is remarkable. It's amazing. We often look at her and wonder, how does she do that?
Exactly. Yeah.
And she is extraordinary, and not everybody is that kind of self-motivated. Certainly not everybody has a parent like she did who demanded that her children read and write. And so to be able to introduce children and adults to the world that's available to them when they can read and write, it's a wonderful thing to be able to do. And the beautiful part of it is that we can start the kind of program that we want to start without stepping on any toes at all. We are simply starting a tutoring program for anyone who wants to improve their English language skills.
And I think that's such a good point, that not everyone is going to be extraordinary like Teresa, and yet that's in a sense where I feel like the mentoring comes in that, so at the first wave of people who are going to really succeed with this, if you will, are going to be the extraordinary people. But as that happens, other people, the next tier of people will see that happening and will be in, well, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. And then the next tier of people get, and it's sort of in the same way that practice feels like it does, that we support each other, you could say there'd be a sangha of speaking English in a sense.
Yes, and with the other things that we're doing there, the kinds of work that Rose is trying to do with especially the teenagers, but everybody in the community, the business opportunities that now exist for the sewing cooperative, for the hammer mill as we get that together, for the stoves that the men are making, it all begins to work together in a wonderful way, because as people improve these skills, they can be more involved in a larger community. They can take a bigger role in the cooperative. They're bringing more resources back to the whole community. And it does have that the effect that you're talking about, because people can see that this is going somewhere. It's not, I'm not just learning to speak English because there's an opportunity to do that. I'm going to be able to make more money. I'm going to be able to improve my home, send my children to school, see a possibility of them having a job, a career in the future.
It's critical putting the two pieces together, isn't it? Because if you're just saying to people over and over, oh, you got to speak English, you got to speak English, you got to speak English, and neither the children nor the adults are seeing anyone ever leave Cantillumbo or ever have any kind of opportunity, it's sort of like, really? Why?
Yeah. Why?
Why would I do that?
Mm-hmm.
But so pairing it with the economic development that's happening through Living Compassion is so perfect. I mean, because on the flip side of it, so you could have the, you know, you could be the best tinsmith in the world, but if you don't speak English, you're never going to get to that. I mean, Zambia has 72 major languages, let alone all of the other little ones. So if you're going to be doing any kind of major commerce, you have to speak English.
Yes. Yeah. And even being in the larger community of Ndola, the people whose potential for better jobs and that sort of thing would really benefit from an English language school. I mean, it's just huge. They're just on the brink of having a computer-based economy. And so people to train in those skills, that's going to become more and more of a demand.
Yeah.
And if we can start providing the people who can read and write, who can teach, who can fill those positions, it's a good thing.
It's really good. And, of course, the reason we have you on today to talk about it is that we're in the middle of meeting this challenge grant that a woman in the Sangha put up, $5,000 grant, that we're hoping. We're going to run it for 2 weeks. We're going to run it from 2 weeks starting today because last week's radio show essentially didn't happen.
Yes.
even though I think you were hearing the whole update, weren't you?
Oh, yes, I was right there. I could hear Michael saying, you're unmuted. Can you hear me? And I'm saying, yes, I can, Michael, and wasn't going anywhere.
So we kind of got a false start there. So we're starting today, and we're inviting the Sangha to match it. And I know, you know, we raised the roof fund so quickly because it's so tangible and it's so inspiring to make that kind of an impact on a life, to actually imagine someone having a safe home. And I hope people will take from this conversation that this has that same level of importance, if not in some ways you could say more, in the sense that it walks us towards a sustainable future. It actually gives people, it takes them beyond survival. So we've met survival needs. Now what? Now it gives them an opportunity to really start making their own choices in their lives.
Yes.
So
it's very big for everybody, and, you know, not least, just in terms of pride, my dream of having this kind of facility at Cantalomba is one more step along that path of assisting these people to really feel proud of their community and the contribution that they're making, instead of being the kind of the lowest of the low in terms of people's view of them, but to have one more thing that they can really feel good about making a contribution toward.
When you were talking earlier, I had this image of, you know, parents in Lobuto. Lobuto's the next neighborhood over, and quite a bit better off than Cantalomba. Most people have electricity, and most people have enough to eat. But I had this image of, oh, I'm going to enroll my kids in that after-school English program in Cantalomba.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
And they can bring home some clean water
after
they finish their classes.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so much possibility with it. So, you know, $5,000, it's a chunk of money, but if we all come together in the next couple of weeks, it really isn't that much. So, you know, throw in 5 or 10 or whatever.
Yeah, and what it can do in Cantalomba is extraordinary.
Huge.
I mean, we really can find the person who can create the curriculum and mentor and coach the teachers and just bring the quality of education way, way up there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We can get the equivalent of Rose,
yes,
in an educator.
Exactly. And so we've got the $5,000 challenge grant. We've got the $5,000 the Sangha is going to match. And then I've put my hat in the ring to say I'm going to raise $5,000 more through an effort I'm going to do. So that $15,000 truly will take us forward into finding the person, maybe even an assistant. It will get us the books that we need and hopefully, you know, some of the infrastructure around what's needed to really get it going. So that really is what we need. So I hope people will jump in and participate on that level with us. So, Sherry, thank you so, so much for being on and talking about this with us.
It's a pleasure. Anytime.
All right. And I'll turn it over to both you and Michael.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you, Jen. And good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. How are you, Sherry?
Good, Michael. It's good to hear your voice and know that you're hearing mine.
Yes, and it feels kind of miraculous today.
It does. We can take these things for granted until we have a week like last week.
Should I uncross my fingers now or wait till the end of the... Yeah.
I think we're good for now.
Wonderful. Yeah. I have some announcements here.
Good.
September 7th through 14th, Wednesday to Wednesday, will be the extraordinary There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California.
Hmm.
And that's coming up.
That's coming right up. Yes, it is.
Yes. Yes. I remember last week's Good News Update was a great encouragement towards that.
Uh-huh.
And it's time to make plans to join you, Sherry, and the monks at the 10th Annual Bridge Walk on Saturday, October 1st.
Yes.
And the website has all the details for signing up. And with that, I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. And I think we're ready to go, Sherry.
Yes. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael. It's Sridevi from San Francisco.
Well, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Great. What's going on?
I was calling because I'm doing the email class currently,
mm-hmm.
and I have a sense that I'm a one. I thought I was a different type, but I'm seeing some things come through, which has really been helpful, and seeing the other class responses going, wait a second, I think I'm...
That's
my vibe. Yeah, that's my group. And so from what I'm learning and what I'm seeing about my patterns is a lot around perfection.
Uh-huh.
And I was curious about how to manage that, because there's this part of me that so truly believes, and I identify with her a lot, so it feels like it's me all the time, that actually believes she can be perfect and it's possible. And I see how sometimes that's actually great for me because I feel like it helps me push myself, and I totally see the negative side because it just ends up in so much beating that constantly happens.
Yeah.
And I feel like I struggle with not knowing how to manage that part of me that just so believes it's somehow possible.
Well, let's explore it from a slightly different angle than I think we usually explore these things. What is the point of being perfect?
Yeah, I think it's this idea that if I am perfect, I will be loved.
Yeah.
And there won't be any reason for someone not to love me.
Yeah. And so, well, of course, you've noticed that perfection is kind of a moving target.
Yes, yes.
Right?
I've actually noticed quite a lot that what's perfect for one person, what I think somebody wants changes. So my, like you said, exactly, my standards of what's perfect changes all the time.
Yeah. And so the part that strikes me about it is that we sometimes forget how egocentric it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not actually that I want to be perfect for any reason other than what it's going to get me, which you identified very clearly. You know, if I'm perfect, then I'll be lovable, and there won't be any reason for anybody not to love me.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah.
Of course, that's not true, because you've noticed that you can just be perfect all over the place, and people can still be unhappy with you.
Yes.
Yeah? So
yeah.
It seems to me like it's way easier to help that person realize that she's lovable.
Yeah.
And loved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether she meets somebody's standard of perfection or not.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it truly is conditional, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can see how, and what my experience has been is how exhausting it is to try to meet it. And I've been seeing this a lot around my weight. And just the what I do with trying to eat perfectly because I want to have this certain type of body. And I just hit a breaking point where it was about 2 weeks ago where I just said, I can't do this anymore. I am exhausted all the time from all of this allowing this critique.
Yeah.
And what I went to, and I think this has really been, and it really was like the light bulb, even though I've been doing the email class now for, you know, a couple weeks. Or 3 weeks almost now, like the light bulb of, wait a second, this is part of my pattern, and I hadn't made the association.
Uh-huh.
And something new that's been really helpful for me is I feel that every time I look in the mirror, there's this immediate frustration, this immediate critique because my body isn't perfect.
Yeah.
And what I've done
isn't
is normally...
somebody's standard. doesn't meet somebody's standard of perfect, which is
yes.
not the same as your body isn't perfect.
True,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
exactly
that,
correct.
They don't like us to get that.
They don't like us to get that, yeah. And one of the things that I've realized is I think I've spent a lot of energy trying to argue with that standard or trying to argue with the frustration or engaging into a conversation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
there was this turning point I hit about a week and a half ago where I decided I'm not going to try to take anything away from this. Instead, I'm going to add something. And what I've been trying to do is just add kindness and patience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's been so different. This is like a lifelong struggle, and it's been so different for this week and a half, and everything still happens. All the immediate negativity and voices show up every single time, but after they're done, or not even after they're done, at some point I just go, I'm really happy with the choices I'm making, and I'm eating well, and I'm keeping my commitment, and I'm okay, and I'm fine,
yeah.
and it's different, and there was this moment where I just went, I'm going to add something to this. I'm not going to try to change anything, but I'm going to bring in some kindness and compassion, and that's been really helpful.
Yeah. You know, when you say that, it makes me realize that when we have a karmic orientation, like we look at with the Enneagram, so in your case, the perfection thing, what it doesn't say is, you know, it would be really good for you to work toward being perfectly kind.
Yeah.
Perfectly compassionate toward yourself. It always picks something in the realm of doing,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have to do something about your body to make it meet this standard.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do something in terms of your work. You have to meet a certain standard of success or performance or whatever it is. You have to do those tasks perfectly in order to be all right. So if meeting a standard of perfection, working toward, and that's very different, isn't it, meeting a standard or working toward a standard. So if perfection is going to be an issue, to make the orientation that I'm going to work toward a perfect expression of compassion and kindness for myself and all of life.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, that's great. Yeah, absolutely.
And the other part that we touched on that I know you know, but I really want to underline it, is to let that person know that she is lovable and she
mm-hmm.
is loved exactly as she is. Because otherwise, you know, this is kind of it's a subtle point, but I think it's a really important one. If I'm lovable because my body looks a certain way, it's not love. Because it's not me.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a I'm loved as I am. I'm loved for who and what I am. It's if I make myself into something else, then I will receive what is called love. And it never really feels quite right because it isn't.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And one thing that I think it was from one of the workshops I attended at some point that we did was it was assignment to like look through young pictures of yourself. And I have one that sits on my dresser. And every now and then I'll stop by and look at it and I feel exactly that way of going, oh, I just love that girl. She's just perfect exactly as she is. She's so sweet. She has the biggest smile on her face. She cannot be happier. And that's me, you know. And there's such an easy way when looking at younger pictures of myself to transfer that, to feel that love or connect quicker. I find it's a struggle in like looking at myself now because there's always, but I imagine in 10 years I'll look back at myself now and going, oh, she was so great. And I guess the possibility or what I'm realizing with the practice is I don't have to wait 10 years. I can do it right now, right?
And what you're saying is so important because if you don't turn that around, you'll always be looking back at yourself a decade before and wishing that you had appreciated yourself then because then you were so much better than you are now, and it's just a tragic way to miss a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Well, you are so welcome. It's great talking with you.
Great talking with you, too. Bye, Michael. Bye, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Rebecca.
Hello,
Hi.
Rebecca.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I really want to get in on back on the good news update conversation for just a little bit, and then if there's time for me to talk about my issue, then we'll do that. But I had something I just wanted to say about the English program.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's kind of, a fundraiser type thing, but if folks, you know, out there have not liked the Africa Vulnerable Children's page on Facebook, it makes it, they should do that, because it makes it so easy to share. So that's what I've been doing. I share what comes through about that, and put my own little notes about it. And my friends on Facebook have been thanking me for doing that, and for just because it's so heart opening. And I recently put a thing about this, and I don't think it's an oversimplification, but I said that the difference between poverty and employment in Dola is English. And you know, and then just ask folks for $25 and put the link, you know, and it just, I don't know if anybody gave or not, but it just feels good to do that. And the fact that people are thanking me, and I got to even say good news from Africa when I got to tell all my Facebook friends about the roofs, and you know, we don't hear good news from Africa very often. And it, you know, so I just want to give that little commercial, because I'm getting so much feedback from my Facebook friends about that.
Oh, that's excellent.
I know. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, it's very fun, and it's inspiring. And you're right. I've heard the term poverty pornography. And
what?
That so much of what happens around assisting in impoverished parts of the world is presenting poverty as in a really exploitive sort of way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Using poor people to generate funds. And
yeah.
I'm not saying that the funds don't go to a good place. I'm not saying that. I bet they do, and I'm hoping that they do. But it can leave you feeling bad instead
yeah.
of uplifted. And the thing that I like about the work in Cantalomba that I like so much is that it is good news, that it's working. Lives are changing. And
And in that way, the money, I project anyway, is coming from an open heart instead of a fearful or sad or,
yeah.
you know,
guilty.
Scared. Yeah, guilty, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's just... you know, you've got a friend who is, you know, having kind of a rough go and could use a little assistance there.
Yeah. So
great.
I was really excited to hear that. I was dying to get in on that conversation. So there.
Good. So put on your other hat and tell us what's going on with you.
Yeah. Well, I can just sort of take what you and Sri Devi just talked about and change it from the one to a two. The connection, you know, perfection to connection, I don't know. It's just this email class was like waving a red flag in front of a bull for my two conditioning.
Aha!
Uh-huh. It's been really rough.
Can you say a little bit about that? Of what that?
Yeah.
Means?
Gosh, I can just feel the emotion come up. Let's see. Well, it's like, okay, so I now know, or I, you know, I'm seeing really how conditioning is this sort of addiction to connect with people is what it feels like, and it is just running. Like I'm constantly, and it's usually in this case, this time around, it's around sexuality. And so I'm just kind of have this sort of desperate, like an alcoholic who is just looking for a drink, who, you know, I'm just like looking for a relationship, looking, you know, and it's just this kind of, and then of course I get in that way. And then on the flip side of that, I get called pathetic and, you know, all those yeah. lovely things. And so, and I don't know, just kind of hanging on for dear life over here.
Uh-huh. And so it's helpful to see it in the context of the karmic orientation of a two. And at the same time, conditioning really uses that information against you.
Yeah.
It's the reason you're pathetic.
Yeah, it's the reason I'm pathetic, and produces all kinds of evidence, you know. And I couldn't really get it. I couldn't get it in any kind of a context, you know. It's like usually I can disidentify enough to hold it in a bigger picture, but surprisingly there was often times it was weird. There were, I knew I needed to disidentify, I knew even how to do it, but there was almost barely the willingness to do it. Because I mean, I would say, like to my reflective listening buddies or whatever, I would say, okay, if I were gonna step back and look at this with compassion, then I might say, and then no words would come. You know, it's like, I can't get there, you know?
And does it feel as if the identification is what's being asked to let go and it doesn't want to? Or is it something very close to the identification that doesn't want you to let go?
It feels like it's something very close to the identification. Like, I just, when you said that, I just got this image of a Nazi who's just kind of hovering over me, like
nightstick at the ready.
Say it again.
Nightstick at the ready.
Yes. Yep. Like, I'm too afraid to try to go there. You know, to the disidentification. Like.
Uh-huh. You know, this is slightly off the subject, and something tells me that we've had this conversation before, but I just want to kind of get your response to this, and then it might give you something to look at until we talk next time. But, you know, having a relationship would not be that difficult to manage.
Well, yeah, I think we have, but I don't know. Okay, so here's my response. I don't know what you mean by that. What do you, I mean, oh,
well, I mean, there are a ton of people who would be happy to be in a relationship, especially a sexual relationship.
Okay, and then here, I just want to say, give me their names and give me their phone numbers. I mean, you know, it's like,
well,
They're everywhere.
Everywhere around you. But that's not actually what you want.
Yeah, I guess.
Is that true?
Yeah, we've had this exact conversation. I know we have. And
it sounds familiar to me, too.
Yeah.
So this gets presented as this kind of simple, straightforward thing. Right? the whole issue that's up now is around sexuality and wanting a relationship, wanting an intimate relationship, right? And so I suggest to you that that would not actually be hard for you to manage. But then what comes up right behind that is, well, yeah, but I don't want that relationship with just anybody.
Yeah.
Now we start layering on all, what's really going on.
Which is the not that, or the, it's got to be this, or I can't do that, or all of the standards, or all of the
That to me is what's going to be really interesting and informative and important to clarify. Because it gets presented as such a small, simple thing. My God, you know, everybody in the world can achieve this. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But then when we look at why this is not happening for you, it's because of all of these other things. Because you can't just have that kind of relationship with anybody. It has to be with somebody, and now we get the list.
Mm-hmm.
Who's this way and this way and this way and feels that way and has you feel that way and is in this kind of commitment to you or this kind of...
Yeah, yes, I can see all that. I can see all that list emerging in my mind. Right?
It's really a long list, but it's never explored because it's camouflaged behind this karmic story that you're being told.
The karmic story of
this.
It's such a simple
thing, and you are so pathetic. Why?
Yeah.
What is the? So you know, if you were to say, well, great, you know, this is the relationship that I want, and I'm going to go out and find somebody tomorrow and have this relationship with them. I mean, the screaming would deafen you. What are you thinking? What are you saying? You can't. What about this? What about that? What about?
Yeah. Can I tell you just a little bit of something that happened like that? So I was driving, and all this was happening, and I don't have a partner. I can't have this. I can't, you know, I'm not finding anybody. Life's not providing me with a decent boyfriend, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then this little voice comes up and says, well, you could just go, you know, out somewhere and find someone and seduce someone. And boy, you would have thought, you know, it was like, you could just like do it. And and that was like not what the program was calling for.
That's right. That is not what, because the program is there to make you miserable.
Yeah. Okay, I'm seeing it.
And you're going right along with it.
And I'm going right along with it, yeah. And that program, it goes way back.
Most karmic conditioning does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So you've got an assignment, right, between now and when we talk next. Figure out what the real story is here. And, you know, along with what's the real story, who are the players?
Yeah.
So somebody wants this, and somebody wants that, and somebody says that, and somebody starts screaming, and
yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, gosh, it's so. This is big because the reason I know it's so big is because it's still so vague, so dense right now, you know. But I know that the more I look at it, the more clear it will be, of course, and so. I appreciate that assignment and can't wait to listen to this again.
And fortunately, there will be a recording of this available, right? So when it tries to just fog it over completely so you have no idea what we talked about, you can listen in again.
Yeah, that's right. Cause it will, and you know, and maybe in 6 months we'll have this exact same conversation the third time. But you know, but anyway, it is very helpful.
Good.
And,
glad.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry, and hi, Michael. This is Justin calling.
Hi there.
Hi. So, yeah, I almost felt like hanging up because everything in the last couple of calls you pretty much answered for me. So
we're just one person in many bodies.
And the crazy thing is I'm a six, I think. I'm clear that I'm a six. And so, you know, you just switch out security for connection or for perfection and you're pretty much done. But the one thing I have been looking at and sitting with has been financial security.
Uh-huh.
And I guess, familiar, I mean, in terms of family-wise, it's always been passed down that, you know, it's been instilled that I've had to have an entrepreneurial kind of view. And
if
so,
you could speak up just a little bit, I'd so appreciate it.
That's
okay. It's been passed down that, and then I didn't hear what.
Oh, so it's been passed down that I've had to be entrepreneurial to get some form of financial security.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, even though I've got a perfectly fine career, I'm a professional, so it's not like I don't have a day job. But there's this feeling that I've got to keep that eggs me on to find that you know that the entrepreneurial venture that will kind of catapult me into financial security. So, you know, I've started up internet businesses, I've bought and sold property, I've done you know this and that, and it's always and as you can imagine, it's you know with the 3-year-old and with a full-time job, and you always get to that point where you're so exhausted you fall over, and then you kind of, you know, I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah.
And then it's just a bit more time, and then you know, and I know that I'm just, you know, I'm on the press. I'm just at that point at the threshold of starting a new business. And weirdly enough, as I'm doing this this email class. it's you know, the light bulb goes off and I can see it more clearly. And I also know that, you know, the striving for financial security is a bit of a, you can strive but never get there. But, you know,
yeah.
And have a lot of suffering doing that striving.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the piece of that that I think many of us can relate to all of what you're saying, but that that being pushed, push that karma does with us until we just get so exhausted we can't do it any longer. And I'm clear. I'm not going to do this. I'm finished with that. And then some time goes by, and we get rested up, get our strength back, and here come the voices. Well, do it. Jump right on that treadmill and start running again.
Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it's just, you know, and it coincided perfectly. I guess because it would have, because it's, I'm in this constant cycle, but just seeing how I just get sucked in,
yeah.
And I think you're right. It's, yeah. I mean, initially my initial suspicion was, yeah, well, it's just self-hate, you know, wanting to, you know, do this to you. But I'm starting to see, I think there is a part of me that really loves the excitement of starting something new, and then there is that part of me that really craves that security that potentially could come at the end. So there are the players that,
yes.
That I'm starting to see.
Yeah, yeah. We get to see what self-hate is able to use.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And again, that's such an important and helpful distinction that. I'm not attempting to get rid of the part of me who enjoys doing something new, the excitement, the challenge, that whole thing. I'm not trying to get rid of the part of me who wants to feel as secure as possible in a very insecure world and reality. What I want to do is have a direct relationship with those aspects of myself and not let self-hate take over and torture them.
And self-hate always has the last laugh, right? And this is the thing. I've had ventures that have been, you know, financially successful, but there's always that, you know, you ruined a relationship, or you've done something that you really shouldn't, you know, it's kind of iffy, it's kind of, you know, why did you do that? So at the tail end, there is always enough for me to really get beat up and really, like, none of these ventures have been enjoyable, you know, they go up and down, but at the end of it, like you say, you're just so beaten up.
Yeah, if I'm understanding what you're saying, if we're not paying close attention and being really, really careful, karmic conditioning, self-hate will just push until we tip over that line.
Yeah.
With anything, right? It'll just demand more and more and more and more until it turns whatever it is that we're doing into a misery.
Well, thank you for that. And like I said, I mean, I pretty much answered you. You answered all my questions with Sridevi and with Rebecca.
Okay. Oh,
anyway, I'll pass the line along. And thank you so much. The work you're doing is so inspiring in Cantaloma with Jen and whatnot. So thank you very much.
Great.
And,
well, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Justin. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Daniel calling from San Francisco.
Well, hello.
Hi.
I've been listening to the show via the podcast for more years than I remember. and this is the first time I've ever called in.
Aha! I think we get big points for that, don't we?
I better, because I'm calling in response to the challenge that another first-time caller laid down recently.
Very good, very good, very good. All right. Well, what's going on?
Well, I came back from the What You Practice retreat with a lot of inspiration, and that's one of the things that enabled me to actually call when I think it was before the retreat that I had heard that challenge, and I thought,
is that me? I don't know.
He's talking to me. He's talking to me. So, so I just wanted to say that I have this belief that, it's a two-part. One of them, first part seems to actually be so that I have no problem getting up in front of a room of people and singing, but getting up in front of a small group of people and just speaking what's on my mind scares the heck out of me. Well, that doesn't scare the heck out of me. The voice of egocentric karma conditioning does its best to scare the heck out of me, and many times I believe it.
Yeah. That this is an evening of great distinctions for me. That's such an essential point. Speaking in front of a group of people is not a problem at all until the voices kick in and decide to make it a miserable situation. And then if I listen to them and go along with them, there's a whole lot of suffering.
Yeah. And I had just such a clear picture of that this past weekend. I was at a weekend workshop. People actually do talk to each other the whole weekend. And it's a very social workshop. And I watched myself go in and out of feeling connected and feeling isolated, feeling alone, feeling inadequate, all based on whether or not I was believing the voice that tells me that I can't connect with people.
Yeah. Yep. There it is. The voice is not telling you that. You're not having that experience. The voice starts telling you that. You're having that experience. And of course, we're meant to believe that it's not the voice that's causing the experience, it's the externals that are causing the experience. Right.
Right.
Yeah, I can't connect with those people. Well, I was connecting just fine until the voice told me that I couldn't connect with those people.
Right. And then when I caught on to it, as it so often does, conditioning managed to turn my victory into its victory by then getting me to dwell on the fact that I keep getting caught up in that story.
Yeah.
I was stuck in that for a little while before I caught on to that and dropped that.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed another thing about that. I've heard you talk before about the voice projecting, and I saw that for myself. The voice was saying, "You get in your own way of connecting with other people."
Uh-huh.
And I saw that the voice was projecting that it's not me that gets in my own way, it's the voice that gets in my own way.
Yes. And isn't that a handy tool to have?
Yeah.
Realize that voice is always projecting its experience onto you. and then working really hard to get you to believe that it's your experience. God, that is so big.
So, I might leave it at that for my first call.
I think you did brilliantly, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, just say yes,
yes,
okay?
Yes, yes, of course. I'm a one.
Ah, yes, it was perfect.
It was. It was perfect.
All right. Thank you,
Daniel. All right. Daniel. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you,
Michael. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Daniel. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
This is Tracy. Hi, Sherry and Michael.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi.
What's going on in Tracy's world?
There's a lot going on, and it was so interesting. I had, I was going on in my mind of like, wow, there's so many things I want to talk about, and listening to the other callers, I've gotten a little kind of disidentified with what I want to talk about, but I'll just see what comes out.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
We could, you know, there's always a possibility that you'll re-identify in talking about it, or you get to look at it from a disidentified place. You just can't lose, really.
You can't lose. Well, what I'll just start out saying is I just met a really, really wonderful man in the beginning of the summer. And you know, the thing that just makes me smile is, he said to me not that long ago, he said, you know, I like you because you like you and I like me. I thought, oh my gosh, it really has so much to do with practice. Like, you know, it's like been such a way to celebrate, like, gosh, you know, doing all this work on, you know, getting working through self-hate and, you know, having it less and less kind of come into my life. I thought, wow, it's amazing how, you know, as you know, my tendency to attract, you know, real critical people or people that haven't been critical enough, you know, and it's just all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, this is so easy and he's so great and, you know, I just spent all this time in the light room and so anyway, it's just, I've just thought, oh my gosh, thank goodness for, it just makes all those years of practicing really worth it.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Because I don't know if I should actually say this, but what the heck. I seem to remember that you, a big part of coming to practice for you was being sent by someone who thought you needed to do personal growth work.
Exactly. And it was, you know, the irony is that in going to being sent so I could see everything that was wrong with me, so I could figure out what I was doing, so I could be good in this relationship, is exactly the opposite of what needed to happen. And so, yeah, you know, it's been years and years. I think that was in 02 or 03 of just not really, yeah, I mean, realizing like, oh my gosh, the only way, I mean, the relationship, you know, there was definitely some really unhealthy patterns and the realization of, wow, you know, the only way I have a chance for a healthy relationship is to really get into a healthy relationship with myself. And that's just, you know. And so anyway, so I guess that's, I'm calling to kind of just voice that. I guess that, I can call it a success.
Yeah, that practice works.
Practice works. And, yeah, and I think, not I think, but, you know, I'm already sensing the karmic pattern that is between the two of us, and the email class has been great because I think he's a seven, and so he's, you know, loves to be involved and participate and is really fun and spontaneous, and, you know, what also comes with that is scattered and doesn't like to really keep an agenda and gets really distracted and has a hard time keeping on a plan. And then my two tendency, you know, and add on a little bit of Yeah, I mean, I've got that really responsible girl that doesn't want to make any mistakes, and she wants to show up for everything she's committed to, and so navigating through that, I mean, in the beginning, you know, he said, wow, you're not really even available for relationship, and so there's been a whole thing of, you know, gosh, what do I want to let go of, you know, so I can be available, and then once I am, you know, available in our time together, you know, watching in me of, okay, we've set, you know, this time to be together and, you know, X, Y, and Z, and then he gets distracted over here and then over here. And so it hasn't become a real issue yet, but I'm like, oh, I think this is what I get to work with on this one.
Yeah, we can see it out there on the horizon. And, and yes, your point is a really good one. When we can step back from it and realize, well, you know, I have these karmic tendencies, and he has those karmic tendencies, and they're good. You know, we're not looking at who's right and who's wrong, but we can look at how do we each work with these karmic predispositions so that we can be there and as present and loving as we can be for ourselves and for one another. It seems to me like that's kind of what life and practice offers us.
It is, and then this is where my hesitancy comes in. When I've brought things up, it feels like when I'm in a really centered place, he's heard everything. And in the moment when I've gotten triggered by something, it feels like it's just ground. I guess this is where it would be great to get your guidance as to, the recording listening has been so great as to, like, when do I just step off and say, I just need to take care of myself right now, and we've got to talk about this later. Because he's, you know, I don't know if all sevens are like this, but he doesn't like to conform, or he doesn't really, you know, want to go along with any program and analyze too much. You know, there's just this real free-spiritedness.
Yeah, and it, which is great, right? You don't need to take that on or interfere with it or anything else, and you're responsible for you and what's going on with you.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
If we recognize that, if we realize that our responsibility is us, and not in a I don't care about you sort of way, but I can't hope that you're going to fix me or save me or anything. I can enjoy being with you, and I'm still responsible for working out my own salvation diligently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So if I start giving up what I know is my responsibility toward my own life in order to accommodate you in some way down the road, I'm going to be resentful, and I'm going to be blaming you for what I did.
Right.
Yeah, so it's very tricky to stay in a clear, clean place about, you know, everything that this, it's hard to say this without it sounding as silly as it's going to sound. Everything in my experience is my experience.
Right.
Yeah. So I can't blame you for my experience, and I'm responsible for taking care of my experience.
Yes, I'm totally with you. And it feels like, you know, I think after years of practice, it feels like I really am at the place where it's like, yep, this is my experience, and really being able to know that ultimately, you know, there's got to be someone that needs to show up for this person.
Yes.
And the sketchy part, I shouldn't say sketchy, the part that becomes a little gray for me is noting when there's an identity that's taken something on that she's got to be responsible for versus the heart in me that's like, I need to really stay responsible to this, because I've noticed that there's a sub in me that is just so responsible and so on it and so, and it feels like, you know, she can be exhausting.
Yes.
So it's like navigating through those two places.
Well, and of course, relationship makes it so fun because I don't know how much it compounds it, but you know, there's all the aspects of you, all the aspects of him,
right?
All the aspects of him relating to all the aspects of you, and vice versa. You know, it really gets to be crowd control after a while. Mob management.
Yeah, because it's almost like cleaner. I shouldn't say cleaner, that's not the right word, but just like clear when it's just me navigating through my world, but then you add in another person and their preferences and their views and what their interests and, you know, desires are and, you know, what my obligations are and, you know, where my heart is. It does start getting like, whoa, like who is driving what bus and, you know, in what direction?
Yeah. And it's just like anything in life. You know, if we just stay in our own little cocoon, karmic conditioning can be very, very comfortable. And that's pretty much what we'll have, is karmic conditioning in control of our lives, orchestrating everything the way it wants to. And of course, we can train and we can practice and but boy, as soon as that, you know, in this practice, the reason we're so focused on participation is exactly what we're talking about. You know, as soon as you get involved with something, other people come around. Other people's ideas and needs and wants and conditioning and all of that. Then now we're getting to see an awful lot of
big gosh, it's so, I can totally relate to that because it feels like the level of joy and happiness has been just so, it's just been incredible. And then also the level of vulnerability and insecurity that has come out too has been really incredible too.
Yeah.
It's like amazing where, you know, my last relationship, I battled, you know, against, you know, taking care of the one I just felt so criticized. And this one, you know, it's just so different. I'm feeling insecure around this person, so wonderful. You know, like, you know, self-hate tries to get in there once in a while, like, well, then why is he with you? and then it's just like, oh, okay, stop it. No, well,
you went too far.
Not going, exactly. It's like, oh, that's, you got to camouflage it better than that. But yeah, it's just the range of, you know, I guess, you know, the heart really being opened and participating in that. It just feels like it's much more of a free fall being in this realm than being more of just me navigating that boat and illusion that I have a little bit more control.
Right. Yeah. Life seems to enjoy helping us to see that control is an illusion.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, this is very fun and exciting practice.
It's a fun and exciting practice. Yeah, and I'm just so glad I got on. I called so early. I thought for sure I'd be the first caller, and I'm the last caller. So I'm really grateful.
Me too. I know that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you.
Take care.
A good night.
All right.
Bye.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Tracy. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow. We're back on the air, Sherry.
Whew. It's good to be here.
It's great to be here. It was a great show. I really enjoyed that.
Me too.
Thank you.
Until next time. Thanks, Michael.
Until next time. Thank you,
good
Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.